Hey, this is C-Mac D from Waco, Texas.
Hi, this is Aggie JWP calling from Houston, Texas.
Hey, this is Jeff Bolden from Smyrna, Tennessee.
Hey, this is Network Casher from Northern Virginia.
This is Buzz Lightyear.
This is Trumpet Truck from Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is Neon Ride 93 from Appleton, Wisconsin, and you're listening to the Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 126 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live from the South Bend Chocolate Cafe on October 24th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or if you're in our live audience, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll get you a mic. You can join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line, which can be found at 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Daryl, it's, you know, we've been off a couple weeks, and we're actually here live together now. So how have you been?
Not too bad, but you know, it's really weird, because every time we meet up for some caching, it seems like the weather is pretty nasty.
It does. We tried to hit the camera cache up there, and, well, it was raining, and the camera wasn't working, but it's raining every time we meet.
Yeah, you know, I'm beginning to think it's something with you.
Hey now.
I don't know, you know. We'll give it one more try, and I think if next time it's raining, we can't go caching together.
Oh, man. Or just bring the raincoats like we normally do, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's not too bad, too. It's just, you know, we were trying to do a webcam cache this time, and, you know, I think the rain broke the webcam. We'll blame it on the rain.
All right. Sounds good to me.
Well, last week, though, we did the Fall Fun Days up in the Kalamazoo area. That was a lot of fun. But you know, as everyone who listens to the show regularly probably knows, we've been really into those virtual caches. And this is one of those reasons why we're trying to get all those caches. A week ago, well, 2 weeks ago now, one of those virtual caches was archived because some construction killed the wall that was required to make the effect that you were supposed to experience. So that cache got archived only a week before we had to do it.
Yeah, it was fun. We did that virtual cache run with you, and it was definitely a fun run this summer.
Yeah, and you get so many cool things, and they're not going to last forever. You know, as much as we'd like them to, they're just not going to last forever. So we really want to try to get all those done, you know, long before they get archived. But the rest of the week has pretty much just been crazy work stuff and getting prepped for this show. And I actually did a little video yesterday. Did you have a chance to check that out?
I haven't yet. It's been a crazy week here, too. So I haven't. But, you know, we've hung out ourselves with Geek Boy, who normally is on our show, too, last week. He's from Illinois. They came up. We hung out and had some pizza with Geek Boy and Click Chick. And then this last weekend, I was in Southern Indiana for our food show and hit a few caches there. But other than that, it's been just been kind of busy into the summer.
Yeah, it's amazing at how busy it gets this time of year, and it's not even the holidays yet. I'm really scared at what it's going to be like in a few more weeks.
I know, no kidding. Well, what we're doing this week, guys, is we're doing the Cacher Coffee, which is kind of our live format, kind of just anything goes. Normally, we have a topic or two that we just straight talk about. This time, it's kind of lots of whatever goes on, just
yeah,
kind of like
kind of a free form thing. And you know, this is our first actual live and in person Cacher Coffee, and you know, with some real coffee too.
It is, yeah. So the first thing that we want to talk about, well, if you guys have any topics that you want to put in, go ahead and raise your hand. Dree has a mic back there. If you're on TalkShoe, go ahead and press the *8 key to join our call. And but first thing we're going to talk about, Daryl, is kind of a topic that piggybacks off of our last week's topic about the Garmin custom raster maps.
Yeah, we were just talking about that new function in the Colorado, the Oregon, and the Dakotas, where you can actually put those images right in as a map file. And we actually had a chance to play with those a little bit over at the MIGO Fall Fun Days for the state rec area. It was cool, but the problem was the resolution wasn't really good enough to be much help. At least we could kind of get a feel for where trails were. And the roads were different in the park after they had done their changes and whatnot. And the maps that we had on the GPS, even the topo maps, were still showing the old roads that were no longer there. So it was really nice to have that, even though the resolution wasn't very good. But we found a blog post from Tracklog blog that talks about two new tools, and actually they're older tools that have just been modified, that will actually take some of that imagery that's already out there and allow you to just convert it and download it. It doesn't work for things like the park trail maps, but the first one is the G-Raster, and that works with the GeoTIFFs, the Mr. SID format, NOAA BSB, ERDAS, USA map photos. There's a whole list of stuff. And the cool thing about these is that you just take those images, feed it through the program, and you get the KML file out or KMZ file. You don't have to do any of that calibration that you normally have to do. And then there's another one that actually the author of this seems to prefer, which is TopoFusion, which does a whole other series of maps. Now, the one that I really like is one of them was color aerials less than 1 meter to a pixel.
That's, yeah.
That gets really accurate.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that and how I would think that that'd be a lot better than what you were saying that you had there last week.
It definitely would, but I'm worried about the performance and the, you know, capabilities of the unit once you get that much data into it. And, you know, the author actually had a cautionary tale. You want to mention that one?
Yeah, sure. He said the last weekend he loaded a large KMZ file up on his Oregon 400T, and it bricked the 400T. So he said he was able to recover it using a technique that he listed in his post. But he says, you know, remember that this is beta firmware. It's still not 100% good, and he bricked it. So he said, be careful, especially if you load large map files.
Yeah, now we have about 40-ish people in this tiny little room, which is getting overpacked now. But let's see, by a show of hands, how many of you actually have Oregon, Colorado, or even one of the new Dakotas? So we got about 10 people in here. Have any of you actually tried the new functions yet? So that's zero. So right now I'm the only person in the room who's actually tried it.
Yeah, and myself, I haven't, because I've got the 76 CSX, so I haven't had a chance to play with it either.
Yeah, but, you know, at least that one, you don't have to worry about bricking.
That's true. It's tried and true.
That thing just goes, no matter what.
Speaking of bricking, though, our next topic, I don't know if many people have seen this. It has come out, at least on Twitter, a lot. It's been a topic. It's called the reverse geocache puzzle. And it's this guy who had some friends that were getting married, and they were into electronics. So he built this box that had an LCD screen on the front, a little square hole for where the GPS receivers in, and then a button. And basically, there was no other instructions. The box would not open. The only way that when you pushed the button on it, it said welcome the friends' names, and it basically had try one of 50, and then said 365 kilometers, and they had to figure out what was going on.
Now, yeah, this thing is really cool, and it's been all over, so we couldn't not talk about it today. But if you are at home and haven't seen this, hit the link from the show notes because you'll want to see it. And we're passed some copies of this webpage around. It's a really cool, nice wooden box. This guy has all of the instructions about how to build it. And I'm sure butcher his first name, but it looks like Mikal Hart. And he built this thing using standard modules. He doesn't have the software for it posted, but it's something that, you know, really any of us could probably do just from here. And I'm thinking, you know, this would be a really cool concept to do for some kind of, like, puzzle cache. You know, something at some kind of, like, you know, park, historical thing, you know, whatever, where you actually have to go check out a box, take it to a certain location, you know, given the instructions, and it only opens within, you know, a couple of meters, which would probably work for a park. He'd actually set this one up for 2 kilometers because it was supposed to open up at a certain island, which is like the couple's favorite island.
Yeah, well, and the cool thing about it, too, is they tried a couple times, and it said, you know, attempt 2 of 50. The thing that I thought was most interesting about it was he said that he flew it to, I think they were in France, right?
Yeah, it was in France.
He had to take this box to France, and so he had to actually disassemble the box. He was like, I'm not going to take this box altogether through the airport and make them wonder what's going on with it. But he successfully got it through the airport. So, but yeah.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, did you notice why he made it 50 attempts?
Yeah. To save battery power.
He's got this thing running on 4 AA batteries. That's it. And, you know, it's not like this thing has been optimized. This is just, you know, some basic components that you buy off the shelf to build this stuff. And I wish I could do this kind of creative stuff with electronics, because, boy, the caches that I could come up with.
Did you see what he said that he used for the actual locking mechanism?
Yeah, it was a chopstick.
Yeah.
You know, he's got chopsticks and the little eyelets, and that's all he uses to lock it. Now, he also locked himself out of the box once.
Yeah, luckily he said he did build himself a trap door into it. He basically needed to put a plug in it that would apply more power than the batteries were giving it, and then the software would unlock the box. So he figured out a way to do that. But, man, that's...
Well, he made the mistake of doing a software update and not testing it, and this is a perfect example of why you always want to test your software before you go and install it on those important machines. The software update actually killed the unit and locked it, and he couldn't get it open even through the back door, so he had to actually disassemble the box, which he made intentionally very hard to disassemble.
But he did say that they finally got it open, didn't they?
Yeah, he actually pulled the hinges out and do some other stuff, as I recall. But yeah, he got it apart. Now, he doesn't know if the couple actually got into it yet, but there were some choice words for him, according to his description, at the wedding reception, because they actually, or not the wedding reception, it was some event afterward. They did like a banquet in the backyard of the family home or something. And, you know, he's in France. I guess he speaks French, but people were coming up to him with some choice words.
Well, and I think didn't he say that, like, the nephew or somebody grabbed the box and pushed the button once or twice?
Yeah, it was like three button pushes had been used before anyone had, you know, even tried it. And the groom was running around, "Don't push the button! Don't push the button!" Yeah, and he didn't even put much in there that's worth anything.
No, he said that by the time he got all the electronics in it, that there was really only room for, I think he said, a card, like a gift card, and maybe one other thing, but there wasn't much room in there.
Yeah, and it's all stuff that isn't really usable except in the U.S., so, you know, what's he going to do? But I would really love to get something like this going with, like I was talking about, the cache in a park, but I want to do it where it's like an induction pad or something, so it doesn't need any batteries, and then you could have more space in the unit, too. But, you know, you have to solve the puzzle and take the treasure chest. You know, this is the treasure chest of some famous person. You know, you have to find their home and take it there, and then it unlocks. You know, that could be a really fun educational experience. It's like a real life where I go.
Yeah, that's true. It is true. And that's what someone in the comments said the same thing about this box. They it was kind of like a where I go puzzle box, too.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I just don't have that kind of creativity. And, well, it's not the creativity, I guess. It's the expertise. I need to, you know, electronics genius sitting over my shoulder to build one of these things.
Now, before we go on, we are currently doing a contest with the podcast. I kind of explained it beforehand, but we're doing the summer caching stories, so that if you guys here live or on the internet want to give us any of your summer caching stories, you'll be entered into our drawing to win a $50 gift certificate at cacheadvance.com. And they've got some really cool stuff over there, like the magnetic travel bug car things. And if anyone live here wants to tell us a caching story, just go ahead and interrupt us at any time. Dree has the microphone back there. So if you guys want to tell us any stories, like, for instance, I've told mine. I think one of the main things that we did this summer was caching with you guys. We went up to Toledo and did a virtual cache run with Daryl and the Bad Cop and Dree. And then we also, I was up there like a few weekends later for Midwest Geobash. But that was fun. We hit mostly virtual caches and learned a lot of fun stuff, saw a lot of cool things. And
well, and a couple of Earth caches, too.
Yeah, and the Tony Pacos, too.
Yeah, and, you know, Tony Pacos was awesome. I want to make a trip down there just to hit that again. But I do want to thank everyone who's joined us today live. It's really great having you guys out here. And especially being that it's a home game here, and, you know, some of these Notre Dame fans don't pay attention to where they drive, so we know you've taken your life in your hands to get here.
I almost did. We almost got hit twice going from the park up there down to here, so I almost got hit twice.
In like only 5 miles.
It really was. Of course, it was right across from the school, but we do have Geo Junkie here who is live in our chat. I'm going to go ahead and get him on. Welcome to the call.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. You're live in front of our audience. So,
oh, right, great.
So, do you have a summer caching story you'd like to tell us?
I do. I did one back in May that I ended up with. It ended up being a trip I took with a friend of mine, Mystical 68, And basically, we saw this one that's about 115 miles from my house, and it's called Happy New Year. And basically, we read it. It said the things you need to bring to open the cache are a toothpick, your left and right index fingers, a 9-volt battery, a milk-bone dog treat, a pencil, a bird seed, a source of heat, and a toothbrush. So, of course, we just had to go find out what this was. So we ended up making an entire day of it. And we started out the morning, actually, we went to an event cache called Aloha Spirit. And that was one where some local cachers were getting ready to leave the area, taking off to Hawaii. And it was an ingenious way to do an event cache. They were actually holding a garage sale in their front yard. And so we showed up, and they had some goodies and stuff. But I ended up buying a couple things from them and getting some cool swag and things like that. And had a great time there. So that was kind of the start of our morning and the beginning of our trip. And then we went out to try to find, we got to find caches along the way. And it was just some of the coolest caches along the way that we found that were the ones that are the reason you tell people you geocache, because cool spots. We started with a DNF on Forgotten Snow, and we couldn't find that one, so got a little disappointed. But then we drove a few miles down the road, found this one called What Time Is It? And it was very cool because you actually had to tell exactly what time you found it. And the reason why was there's an actual clock right there that's a digital clock. And without giving too much away about the cache, you had to figuring it out. And a place called Timmerman Park that was along the way, which was a magnetic micro on a tank. But it was pretty neat because that whole story about the guy that was in the tank that got the Medal of Honor and just a cool story. And we went along, we found a couple more caches. And a couple of the really cool ones we found. We found one called Got Gas, which was just this completely abandoned gas station by the side of the road. It was about maybe 50 miles from anything else. And you're just driving down the road, and it was kind of funny because we actually drove past it going, wow, that'd be a cool place for a cache. And then she went in and looked on her GPS and was like, well, there's one there. So we whipped back around, turned around, and went and grabbed it. We found another one called the Riviera Hot Wheels cache, which was it was at a racetrack, which was cool because we're both NASCAR fans. We're also big fans of Dale Earnhardt, number 88 car. And they actually had a number 88 car there. It wasn't Dale Earnhardt's. It was marked completely different. It was whatever the amateur thing was there. But we got some pictures with us with the 88 car, which was kind of cool. Then we found Happy New Year. And it was just pretty much the best cache I've ever found. It was a it was on their property. It was in their front yard. They actually had a parking space there. It said reserved for geocachers, and you went up. And again, for if anyone's going to go find this, I can't ruin how to get to it. But I'll just say, at one point, the cache made a lot of noise, and of course, now the neighbors heard us. They came out to watch us try to figure it out. We tried to open one door, and they told us, no, don't go in there. It was a garage full of stuff, and if we'd have opened it, we'd have had stuff fall all over us. So they kind of watched us struggle for a while. Eventually, we figured it out, and like I said, just one of the most awesome caches I've ever found. And then on the way back, we ended up finding some really cool ones, too. There's one cache called Home of the Outdoor Movie, and it's actually the site where the very first free outdoor movie was placed. It was the birthplace of them. It was this little old town in the middle of Nebraska, with an actual painted, if the old cakewalks that you do, they actually had one painted right on the sidewalk there. Then on the way back, we stopped at another one called Johnny Carson Boulevard, which was actually the boyhood home of Johnny Carson. So we got to see that. And they found one called A 42nd Nightmare, which was the site of the deadliest bank robbery in Nebraska history, where five people were killed in the bank robbery, and they had a memorial there, 5 points of a star. So just a really cool experience, and it was just one of those days that was like you got to see things that you would have never seen if you hadn't been geocaching. Saw an awesome cache at the far end of it, and just had an awesome day. So that was probably the highlight of my summer caching as far as just one day of caching.
Cool. Well, thanks again for sharing your summer caching story. If anyone here has any stories that they want to tell, go ahead and raise your hand, and you'll get into our drawing for the $50 gift certificate.
Now, and everyone listening to this recorded, the censorship was not our fault. That's the spoiler police on the internet, I think, taking care of that for us.
Yeah, that's one of the joys of doing a live podcast over the internet and the VOIP and stuff like that. You get some sort of weird audio sometimes.
Yeah, you know, it's that whole thing with shared internet connection, and then we saw, at least four people out there with laptops?
Yeah, so who knows what they're all downloading.
Yeah, so when they start going to YouTube, you know, our bandwidth kind of breaks up.
Well, we have another article here about state park permit sales increased by more than 30% in September, and it is in Minnesota. They have seen recently this year that their permits have gone up because of the fact that they went ahead and added a geocaching program. I know that that seems to be a lot happening, you know, around here in some of the different parks. Daryl, what?
Well, a lot of the parks up by us have already had some kind of official geocaching program. You know, and I talk a lot of the time about liking having the permits for just that reason. But it does allow the park systems to put out little brochures. I think both of the major park systems right by our house actually have a little trifold brochure when you go in. But these kind of numbers are really what we want to be able to go to park systems that right now aren't maybe supporting it. You know, like Parks Canada didn't support caching, and now they're fortunately allowing it again. And the guys in Australia have been working very hard with their national park system down there. So these kind of stories are really good. And this actually came as a press release right out of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. So it's, you know, it's an official source. It's not some reporter that they could dispute his source on it. This is, you know, the the horse's mouth is telling them geocaching is good for your bottom line and increases your attendance.
Well, and they also said, too, that they've been using a lot of radio and ad print stuff, too, to get the word out about recreation and things like that, which is great, especially since a lot of places around here, they're cutting their budgets for the Parks Department because they need to get some sort of a county budget down, and they're cutting their budgets for the parks.
Yeah, and you'll see that just about everywhere, I'm afraid. But if you're, you know, working with a park right now that you want to get geocaches placed, you know, point them to this kind of stuff because this is really good.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll have this article on our website, too, on our show notes. That can be found at geocachingpodcast.info.
And if anyone in the audience has anything they want to talk about, certainly, you know, raise your hand, and, you know, we're happy to chat about all kinds of stuff today. And we have people pointing fingers at other people. Don't worry, we don't bite.
Tag team 1, 2, 3, and?
Music Debbie.
Our husbands were out of town, and so we took off for a weekend and went to Canada caching. We went to Ontario. And had a grand time in Sarnia, but getting back in the States, they wanted to know what we were doing. And we said, we were just visiting Sarnia for the day. They said, exactly, what were you doing? We were geocaching. What's that? Well, people have put things places and we went to find it. Oh, really?
Out in the woods. Explaining this to immigrations, to a customs official.
You know, holding up my GPS going, see, this is what we're doing. Yeah.
So eventually he figured out it was pretty harmless. We're just, you know, saying that, described it enough, and he said, okay, we were okay to go. But when we were getting ready to go on this trip, we're describing, you know, just what some of the fun things about geocaching. Saying that, I said at one point, I'd like to say it, you know, it keeps me out of trouble, but I've probably spent more time talking to uniformed officers in geocaching events, trying to explain what I'm doing. This turned out to be just another example of that.
Well, and, you know, we've done a lot of caching over in Ontario and Sarnia, and Sarnia is a great caching location. We really enjoyed it. But, oh, beautiful stuff. We had one of our more interesting ones out there where it's right on the other side of the St. Clair River. So when you get those winter storms and stuff blowing in, all the snow falls there no matter what. If it's snow nowhere else, it will snow there. So we're out there on a cold, windy day, and we're just trying to cash in this blizzard. I couldn't even see my hand at one point. It got so bad. And we're just walking, doing the whole thing. But yeah, every time you go over there, they're always wanting to know, what's geocaching? I'm sure by now they know. They're just trying to test you, make sure you're not trying to do something that they don't want you doing.
Yeah, luckily I've never had any run-ins with the police. I mean, knock on this plastic table. But I haven't had any run-ins just yet, so that's...
Well, it's probably only a matter of time, unfortunately.
I'm sure.
But yeah, have you ever gone over to Canada at all?
I have. We found the virtual cache at Niagara Falls, but we were there on our anniversary, so we kind of just laid back and...
Well, see, then you had the nice excuse. You don't have to talk to the customs guys. And have you noticed it's always the customs guys on the U.S. side that give you the problems? The Canadians are happy to have you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we had trouble getting, not trouble, but they stopped us and questioned us, you know, coming back in. But going, you know, driving over was not a problem.
Yeah, it's like, you want to give us money, eh? Okay, come on in.
Well, and that was even before I had to have my passport to go over, but...
No, yeah, it's gotten a lot worse. Although, you know, the last couple of times it has been a little bit better because you just pass them all your passports. They just talk to you while they're checking, and they don't even seem to care what the answers are, as long as you seem to be okay.
Yeah. Anybody else have any summer caching stories? Come on, Candy, I know you have one.
Any other topics that anyone wants to talk about, even if they're not summer caching stories?
Well, it's been this for me has been an interesting doing this live podcast like this.
Oh, I love this. This is so much more fun than, you know, doing it through the internet with TalkShoe, because I can see everyone, and you know, it's that interaction that you just don't get normally.
Yeah, normally we record Tuesday nights 9:30 p.m. on TalkShoe.com. You can get there through our website at geocachingpodcast.info. But yeah, it's definitely not as live. I mean, it's live. You can put in your input, but it's not like here where you can actually see each other.
Yeah, it's live. It's not in person.
Yeah, true. So this has been good.
I'd love to do more of these kind of things. It's just a lot of fun.
But you live in Michigan, and I live here, not just over the border here in Michigan.
No,
but,
well, and finding a space to do this is not that easy. You know, we got lucky with this one, really.
Yeah, it was definitely good. We want to thank you guys for coming out today. We're going to go ahead and wrap up our show. Those of you who are here live with us at the cafe, just you're welcome to push the tables or the chairs back and hang out for a little while. We've got the room until 5, so we've got in about another hour. We'd love to talk with you guys and have some, you know, meet you guys if we've never met you before. So, again, our shows are recorded live Tuesday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. So just come out, hang out with us some more. We usually do, it's not quite as open normally. We usually have a topic and then you can put in our topics, but it's not this rambly, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, normally we have a planned topic and, you know, we're always open to suggestions too. So Andy, where can they send those suggestions?
They can find all of our contact information on our website, www.geocachingpodcast.info. There's a form there if you want to suggest a topic for us, or you can call our voicemail line at 206-350-3GPS. That's just a voicemail line. You don't have to worry about waking me up in the middle of the night. You can leave your voicemail there, and we can get you on the show, too. So thanks, everybody, for coming out, and have a safe weekend. Happy caching.